Civilization, where unknown forces strike the edge of ecology.
So we're going to just have a bit of a chat about Interstellar, just a brief episode. I saw it last week, and Peter, I think you just saw it the other day, didn't you?
Yeah, Tuesday, yeah.
Yeah, and I think, safe to say, we both enjoyed it. Not really had a chance to talk about it yet, but I saw it, like I say, about a week ago, and I was pretty blown away by it, and I've had time to kind of absorb it and take in the story, and I was thoroughly impressed. What did you make of it, Peter?
Yeah, you know, it was very good. I haven't seen these last couple of films.
So you've not seen Inception?
No, I haven't seen that.
Oh, you need to see that.
So I'm just taking it as a science fiction film. So it's quite a long film. It's got a very rural feel to it. Then you do go off into space. I mean, I don't think we need to necessarily...
There's no point going into the story, is there? We should just say from the out, if you've not seen the film, don't listen to this, because there's no doubt going to be a few spoilers. So we just have to assume that you've seen the film if you're listening to this.
Yeah, I mean, from a science fiction point of view, I guess it's a near future story. You've got quite old technology in the film and in the farm. You've got a drone that comes over, which looks quite contemporary to today. So I think it's set, I don't know, 50 years ahead, maybe.
It is, yeah. It's set in 2050, I think.
And NASA, obviously, has advanced quite a lot, but in a sort of secret kind of way. And so some of the technology they've got, like the robots, for example, look very high-tech compared to some of the other stuff. But basically, they've found a way of getting out of the star system. So anyway, it's got a bit of a Kubricky feel to going to the gas giant, well, there's the sort of Stargate kind of sphere, I guess it is. So they go inside it, and it's a way of getting to another star, basically. That idea's been done before, obviously, but... Yeah, it ties it in with the black holes and a bit of physics and stuff like that. A good story from the human characters. A little bit solemn, maybe, like a lot of Nolan's films tend to be. Robots are quite good fun. I thought very well designed in their movements.
I think some of the science in the film is based on Kip Thorne, I think, quantum physicist. A lot of it's based on that, but I think the original screenplay was... I think Steven Spielberg was originally going to direct it, but he passed the baton on to Christopher Nolan and said, I think you could do a better job of this. It's not really my sort of screenplay, for whatever reason. He didn't feel he was the right director for the job.
I thought it did. It reminds me a little bit. I know it's a very different film, but something like The Abyss, you know, where they've got a kind of a peril, threat, technology situation, a human drama. Then there's a bit of a transcendence at the end where someone comes, you know, through a very difficult, almost sort of... rite of passage through the elements. In the case of the Abyss, it was water. In this case, it was kind of outer space strangeness. He goes right into the black hole, and that's more abstract, I think. I think in terms of science in it, I believe you could go through a wormhole. The one thing I have to say is we're only doing a short episode on this. So I didn't quite understand why you couldn't come back through the wormhole. Although it is fascinating the way they do the black hole, and we won't reveal exactly what happens there, but some very nice ideas about reality and stuff. But I couldn't quite understand how that physically got him home and why he couldn't have gone back through the wormhole. It's my only thing I didn't quite get.
Yeah, I did read an article about that, and it's a bit... There is some science behind it, but yeah, it does get a bit complex, some of that. And a lot of it's, I think, just plot devices. But one of the elements of the story I wasn't too happy with was I was really... amazed by the scene when they went through the wormhole and Anne Hathaway's character shook hands with an entity, and at that point in the film you were under the impression that was an alien, like an interdimensional alien, and they were kind of giving a helping hand to humanity.
A bit like The Abyss, when they had the water pods coming into the craft.
And I quite like that story element. I quite like the idea of interdimensional aliens just getting involved in our affairs and leading us, but it turns out later in the story you realise that was actually the main character coming through the Tesseract, this device that had been constructed by interdimensional humans, fifth dimensional humans, and as a result he was able to kind of go back in time and interact with different timelines, different events in his life in a sort of non-linear way. And that was an interesting story element, but I'd kind of like the idea of it being aliens, and that's my only slight gripe with the film. And it's really just from my perspective, it's just a plot element that I would have kind of preferred to see it go in a different direction. But it's not really a criticism.
No, I thought in a sense it was a slightly more cosy film or reactionary film, perhaps, than something like 2001, which embraced the unknown. much more, because you just went into the unknown. It's more of an abstract art film, how it was made.
Yeah, it's
and
very true.
Ultimately,
yeah.
Didn't have to know what the meaning was, that the novel does try and explain it. But this kind of buttons its meaning down a little bit, and it does give you a very clever resolution. But it ultimately, it's you're coming back home, and it's relatively cosy and human-centered, which
yes,
is great. But
definitely.
You don't quite get that absolute feeling of the unknown, embracing the unknown, maybe 2001.
Yeah, I agree. It's very human-centric, and it, like you say, it all kind of rains home at the end. And you, so for me, the most powerful scene was probably the scene where anything in the film that deals with relativity, I thought, was particularly powerful, because I don't know of any other films that have dealt with relativity in the way that Interstellar did. And that scene, for example, where they go to the planet, one of the planets that is a prospective planet, they're sort of checking to see if it can harbour life, and they come back and only to realise that they've actually been gone 23 years. And there's a scene where one of the scientists looks at them when they arrive back on the sort of mothership, and he's just in awe, because he's been waiting for so long by himself. And it plays with your head, all that relativity business, and it was quite well done, I thought, all that stuff.
I thought that was good, yeah. That was good. Of course, we knew they were going to be gone 7 years, and then they got delayed by a bit of an accident.
Yeah, the big giant wave caused some issues, and they had to keep thinking about how it affected their timeline back on Earth, and that added an even more sort of grander element to it, because they were worried about how it would muck their timeline up. And of course, it completely did muck the timeline up.
I thought in terms of drama, in the middle it sagged a little bit after that. It picked up again. We had that very good bit, like The Abyss, the Michael Biehn type villain character who tried to double cross and make an escape. And
Matt Damon's character, yeah.
Jaw-droppingly good moment when he blew the airlock, which I thought was stunningly well done.
Yeah, that was good.
And really did jump out of the seat there. That was a great bit. Probably the most dramatic bit of the film, really. Very good when they were rotating to match the... Yeah, to try and dock the craft. I thought that was very good.
Yeah, it was good. And then the whole bit at the end, which is it's kind of debatable. Some people love it, some people hate the ending, I think, but I quite liked it. But the way that the main character, he went through, Matthew McConaughey's character went through into the gargantuan, the giant wormhole, I think, or black hole.
He went to the black hole. If he'd gone back to the wormhole, I thought he could have returned.
Yes, that's...
I don't know. I lost it. It may have been in the plot somewhere about solving gravity and stuff Michael Caine was
maybe
saying.
Maybe it's just an energy fuel issue, maybe?
No, because it was accelerating through. The whole point was they didn't need much fuel. That's the whole why it was a wormhole. So maybe if they hadn't had the fuel to physically get to it, but he did have the fuel to get to the black hole. So it may have been in there somewhere. I just missed it, if it was the explanation for why it was only one way.
But I know what you mean. I did read something, but there is information online about it, but a lot of it's people just trying to fill holes, I think. And at the end of the day, it's a film, it has artistic license, and I guess Nolan didn't want to go down that route. But the scene where they go into that tesseract, that interdimensional device, and I thought that was pretty trippy. That was 2001-ish.
Very well done, yeah.
Yeah,
very
and
good,
it really kind of did blow me away, and watching that in cinema, that scene, it was very powerful, sort of transcendent, and it kind of took you to some very strange place and you didn't quite know what was going on. And then I did like the way that it turned out to be a human construct, but in a way I was hoping for something, like you say, a little bit more mysterious. I was hoping maybe Nolan would have not really explained what it was. It could have just been some bizarre sort of hyper dimension or some kind of strange barrier between two realities, or he was somehow in some space he shouldn't have been in, or I don't know. But it kind of tidied itself up when they said it was a creation of fifth dimensional humans, and then it broke down at the end and he was able to get rescued. It kind of all kind of wrapped up, didn't it, the story at that point.
And then they seemed to have a sort of a rendezvous with Rama style generation starship.
Oh yeah,
which that was great, very well done. I like that touch. That would have made a film in itself. I'm not sure if it was a space station. It seemed to be they built a few in the solar system.
And
it wasn't that the Earth was going to blow up, though. It seemed to be just some sort of thing with the air that was going to go because there weren't enough plants. It didn't seem to be that the Earth itself was... I must admit, if you had to look at those planets they were landing on, they were far worse than living on Earth, I think, with a few dodgy crops.
Yeah, that's a good point, yeah.
Maybe the third one wasn't, but the other two certainly.
I think Corn was about to die or something, wasn't it? So they had no chance at all on Earth.
Well, that's right, but you wonder if it'd be easier just to make a dome on Earth where you've still got everything.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Or just go live on the moon. Yeah.
Well, at least other planets are... But, you know, okay, they were Earth-like planets and...
Or Mars. I think there was some... I can't remember his name quite well, and physicist was tweeting. He was a big fan of the film, but he said, why didn't they just go to Mars? Because that seemed like a better place than all the other planets they went to. I don't know.
Yeah, they had good technology. I mean, they had that interplanetary travel and suspended animation. But, to go to another star, you need something completely different.
Yes.
Obviously, it's only a film. You can't expect to fill all the holes there.
No,
They're not really gaps. They're just things that... Like the thing they built in orbit when he got back, the big cylindrical rendezvous Rama-style craft. He said something about making a centrifuge early on in the film. And it seemed to be implying something like that. And some of them managed to build it in orbit later on.
Yeah.
So they'd obviously got pretty advanced abilities despite everything.
So I guess it might be worth just wrapping up by mentioning the interesting reference to the moon landings.
Well, he was on Kermode, the other podcast that may get a few more listeners.
Mark Kermode, Simon
and
Mayer.
He said people are stupid who believe the moon landings are fake. So.
I didn't think Nolan believed it, but it was just an interesting little reference that he threw in there, and it was certainly in a screening I was in. It caused an interesting reaction from people. I heard somebody went out, yes, finally the truth.
It didn't actually contradict it in the film, because the lady said it in the film, and no one, even Matthew McConaughey, is that his name?
McConaughey,
his character, he didn't actually say that wasn't right. He just said we should still carry on making spaceships. He didn't actually say no, the moon landings happened at any point.
No,
sure. So you could read it as being okay. It's just
just interesting a reference, I thought. I mean, there's no point reading too deeply into it, because Nolan, like you say, he said himself he doesn't believe it, but it was just an interesting little reference.
Yeah. What do you think of the sound? Did you think it was unclear at times? There was one or two.
It was a little bit at times, maybe a little too loud at times, I thought. I think Nolan does have a tendency of going a bit crazy with the audio mix sometimes. Yeah. He certainly was guilty of that in The Dark Knight Rises. Sometimes the Hans Zimmer scores, which are amazing, but sometimes they are a little bit overpowering in the films. But I don't know, it's acceptable. There were certain scenes where it worked and others I wasn't too sure it really worked.
I mean, there's one bit where I think I've heard since he did deliberately obscure the dialogue, but you just couldn't hear what they were saying and the noise built.
Yeah, I'd be interested, I mean, I'll buy it on Blu-ray and it'd be interesting to see if he remasters it for the Blu-ray release. They sometimes do that, but who knows. So, I guess to pay a bit of a homage to the late Roger Ebert, I guess thumbs up from us both.
Oh, definitely. I don't know what Roger Ebert would make of it.
I would have thought he'd like it.
Yeah.
You know, it's absolutely a pretty epic sci-fi film. I can't think of many others that are comparable, like 2001, maybe Sunshine, the Danny Boyle film, perhaps, but that's not really the same calibre, I don't think. Solaris, maybe?
Solaris, yeah. That would be, again, it's about they're in orbit around an intelligent planet. I think the ocean has an effect on their minds. This is another film that mixes a bit of psychology with science fiction, yeah.
But yeah, it's a good modern, one of the best modern sci-fi films I can think of.
SF, we're not meant to say sci-fi. That's John Brunner used to say, that's skiffy, as we call it in the trade.
Oh, right, okay.
Yeah, so that's, it's not skiffy, it's SF. Good popular science fiction. Obviously, it's something you could read in a novel. It'd probably tie up a few bits here and there. But I thought it was novelistically good, if it was a book, which is a good sign, because often SF on the screen is a bit more dumb than that, you know. I thought that was, very good. I think you still need to be quite patient and want to be in that kind of film.
Well, yeah, I mean, for me, the 3 hours flew by. I mean, I'm a big fan of Nolan's work. More so than yourself, I know, but it did remind me of Inception, the way it played with weird kind of story elements, and it basically assumed a certain level of intelligence from its audience, which is very quite rare in modern cinema. But it's a good film, and if you've not seen it, there's still a chance you can grab a seat. I think go and see it. It's going to be showing, I think, for another week or two at least. So yeah, there you go, Interstellar.
Where unknown forces strike the edge of ecology.